Good afternoon, everyone. It is Monday, November 26, 2018, and you are listening to the Crypto Wealth Advisor Podcast, episode number one. That's right. We're still going to house these underneath the Liberty Advisor Podcast, but you know, there's a ton of people out there who could probably care less about crypto, in which case you can just tune off right now, and 10 years from now, you'll probably kick yourself for wondering how come you weren't paying attention back then. And for those of you who don't care about crypto, what I would recommend, if you have not seen it already, if you go to thelibertyadvisor.com, scroll over to here to the upper right-hand corner where it says podcast, and that's where you can go and you can find the YouTubes. Eventually, we're going to put up all the old past ones under YouTube because I had some underneath Libertarian Advisor before I decided to switch. I had others that, you know, basically everything hasn't, the only place where everything's all in one place are the various podcasts. So on the right-hand side, you see we've got, you know, Apple Podcasts or iTunes, Google Play, Player FM, Stitcher, Podbean, and then YouTube. Eventually, we will have all of them on there, but all the recent ones are on there. And what I would highly recommend is that go back. If you haven't seen it, would really recommend going to episode 36, where that was put out 2 days before the market started going down and was talking about, you know, all the different extreme valuations that were going on and all the different contrarian reasons why I did not buy into the hype. And mind you, this was at like the peak of the hysteria of the stock market, or what I think could be the peak of it, where, you know, this is the strongest economy ever. Nothing can basically get in the way. And here I am, you know, a voice out there in the wilderness talking about how we can actually, you know, different signs that are out there that really kind of prove otherwise. Then if you go to episode 37, this is where I talk about, you know, are we in a bear market? What am I doing for my clients? Most of my clients, I'd say almost all of them who have over $30,000 with me, they were in put options. So what that did is they bought insurance on their, not technically, legally not insurance, but the analogy I make is that, you know, you buy fire insurance for your home, hope you never use it. Your house burns down, we build your house back. Well, a lot of people's houses were burning down, metaphorically speaking, with the stock market. Not, you know, no slight to anybody listening to me from California. And basically, we built their houses back with this type of insurance. Episode 38 gets into how we're in a record number of asset classes are actually negative for the year. We talk about how the Democrats are, you know, won the House and any repercussions that have. And then I get into, you know, if we are really winning the trade war or not, because, you know, we always hear about how we're winning the trade war. And I get into some more contrarian information that makes you wonder if we're really winning that trade war. And then get into episode 39, where it's even Jim Cramer is sounding the alarms. And a lot of this is information that would be relatively evergreen to some extent, where I'm not getting into, you know, the hemming and hawing and the getting down to the weeds of the day, but just getting into some bigger macroeconomic issues. And then I guess I'll finish off with a few more quick generalized stock market you know, articles we have here. I'm looking at one from Zero Hedge where it's called Visualizing the Bear Market in the FANG Stocks. So that's Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. And as we take a look at this, so Facebook is down almost 40% from the highs, Amazon down almost 27%, Apple down about 24%, Netflix down 37%, and Google hanging in there the strongest, only down 20.7%, and that's coming from the Visual Capitalist. Then we've got David Stockman, who is Reagan's former, I think, budget advisor, or worked in the budget office. And what he's showing is we have 438 stocks on the New York Stock Exchange have already plunged 40 to 94% from their 52-week highs. So just another great article to look at. We then have an article that gets into share buybacks. In particular, right now, they're talking about IBM, where, you know, it looks at all the different stocks that were outstanding. This must be using it in the scale here must be in the thousands. So if you're listening right now, it would show, you know, 2,200. So multiplied by 1,000 is the amount of shares outstanding. And now it's all the way down to, like, I think it's 908. Hard to read that right there. So let's call it 900. And so basically you've got less shares outstanding. And so by companies, maybe the revenue wasn't increasing, but now there's less shares outstanding. And now that there was less shares outstanding, it made that their earnings per share went up. And that was something I did get into in episode 39, so I don't want to talk a lot about that. So that's enough for the traditional stock market. Hope you know, you guys found that worthwhile. And now we'll get into what's going on into the crypto space. So as we are filming today, we've got Bitcoin at $3,750 according to CoinMarketCap.com. Ethereum almost closing in at $100 at $106. And I shouldn't say closing, because Bitcoin and crypto markets do not close, but closing in on Bitcoin Cash, $180. EOS, $3.17, Stellar, $0.14, Bitcoin SV, $113, which I'm not sure who's going to be invested into that. You know, what coin? Tether can't even hold on to a dollar. Litecoin, 29 cents. Cardano, 3 cents. Monero, $53. Tron is a penny. And other notable ones, you've got Dash in there, 87 cents, and just a bloodbath going on all the way around. I don't want this to be a, you know, Bitcoin Cash versus Bitcoin SV type podcast, but that certainly did play on what has been going on recently in the cryptocurrency space. Now, I want to give a shout out to Josh Sigerson, because he was actually the one that I stole this from, which I guess he stole it from alternative.me/crypto/fear-and-greed-index. So just DuckDuckGo, which is an alternative to Google. So I didn't want to say Google that. So DuckDuckGo, fear and greed index crypto. And what you'll see is right now it's at a 17, with zero being you're crapping your pants and selling everything and the world's coming to an end, and 100 basically being what we saw last year with extreme euphoria. So right now it is at a 17. Yesterday, I guess it got down to a 9. And what they do is they take volatility, accounts for 25% of this. Market momentum and volume is 25%, another 25%. Social media sentiment is another 15%. Surveys, 15%. Dominance. So the dominance of coin resembles the market cap share of the whole crypto market, especially for Bitcoin. We think that a rise in Bitcoin dominance is caused by fear of and thus reduction of too speculative altcoin investments, since Bitcoin is becoming more and more the safe haven of crypto. Okay. On the other side, when Bitcoin dominance shrinks, people are getting more greedy by investing in more risky altcoins, dreaming of their chance on the next big bull run. I do agree with that. And then trends. So they put Google Trends data for various Bitcoin-related search queries, crunch those numbers, especially the search volumes, as well as recommended other current popular searches. For example, if you check Google Trends for Bitcoin, you can't get much information from search volume, but currently you can see that there is a 1,550% rise in the query for Bitcoin price manipulation in the box of related queries from 5/29/18. This is clearly a sign of fear in the market, and we use that for our index. Anyways, for what it's worth, the best time to invest is when there's blood in the streets. And some of you might be thinking, well, hey, Tim, you've got a big conflict of interest in this. You have crypto self-direct, where you're helping people get into part of their retirement money into cryptocurrencies. And for those people, I'd say absolutely guilty. I took something that was very lucrative, where I was already making over six figures, decided to put all that into chaos, and for the most part, hardly make anything this year because the state of Arizona decided not to approve my paperwork. Well, they eventually approved it, but they decided that they weren't going to necessarily move me to the front of the stack to get that done. And, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. When you've got a wife who's only working 2 days a week, basically just to keep your mind busy, and you've got, two children that are 3 years old and 1 year old, and the mortgage to pay and all the bills, and then all of a sudden you put your entire life into jeopardy for something that you believe in and ultimately something that you think is going to be very profitable, then yeah, you can say that I have some sort of, bias towards this. However, ultimately, since I am a fee-only advisor, I get paid really the same no matter what. So I'm not actually getting paid by selling people Bitcoin. I charge management fees. And ultimately, we're putting people into investments that we think are going to increase in value. And I already mentioned the put option strategies that we have. So, as things get more and more tumultuous in the traditional markets, I think more and more people are going to be coming my way. We've had probably three of the best months we've ever had. So I don't want to make it seem like, oh, poor old me over here. So things are rapidly increasing because, like I mentioned the other podcast before, this is something that I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking, and we're really trying to do all that we can to help people out. So in far as I think one of those investments that could, under the right circumstances, produce for the right people a outsized return could be some of the different cryptos. And luckily, the state of Arizona did hold me back. And when you're trying to deal with a lot of the hardcore anarcho-capitalists who are going to be the first early adopters doing something like this, getting them to sign paperwork is sort of like trying to herd cats. And thankfully, as all this was starting to shake out, we kept our clients' money on the sidelines. Some of that was through luck. Now we didn't have our clients experience this. And so when I started my career in the traditional markets, it was September 15th, 2008, which was the day Lehman Brothers went down. And after everything went down, I was doing everything I could to convince people to not get out of the market after everything had crashed. Now, prior to that, I was in a, in, you know, because one of the sayings that was going around is, you know, hey, don't give me a black eye for a fight I wasn't in. And what that referenced is, you know, I didn't have anybody actually invested during the market, but I sort of did because I was running my school student managed investment fund, particularly the financial stocks, made the recommendation in 2007, late 2007, not to buy any, got absolutely chewed out by everybody for that decision. Well, I think one of the stocks I did recommend was Apple. Another one was Johnson & Johnson. Again, we're going back to 2007. And during these euphorias, I mean, no one wanted to hear that they thought something could go down. Just like right now, nobody wants to hear that the stock market could go down. Just like how nobody, you know, everyone thought it was a dumb idea for me to buy a house in 2012 in Arizona when I had moved from New York, because they're like, hey, Tim, you know, haven't you seen the news? You know, don't you realize that the market's absolutely crashed? Same thing with the stock market. Hey, you know, trying to get people to invest in 2009, you know, lucky that I lived in New York where people don't carry guns, because maybe I would have gotten shot. So if you have $1 million with me, or $100,000 with me, or $30,000 with me, and we do, not to make this a big commercial, but we, you know, that side of the business is scalable. So we are willing to take on clients, really at any income or investment level. Now, you know, I can't do the advanced financial planning for people unless they have over $1 million with me. But, you know, depending on what day you get me and I've got time, I'm willing to really kind of help anybody out. You know, I've got a video course on this that you can find on my website at thelibertyadvisor.com, where, you know, if you go into the one of the crypto blogs section of that, you can actually get it. I believe it's a 2-week course where every day we send you another video that really are some of the best videos that I thought. And again, I'm not even selling this. So what I want to do is get people ultimately educated about this. And any stock that I mentioned today and any cryptocurrency I mentioned today, you know, I have to say that I am a financial advisor, but I'm not your financial advisor. Everyone's going to have different amounts that they feel comfortable investing. Everyone's going to have different knowledge bases to this. And this is all just meant to be general information. And until I know your exact situation, how much you can afford to risk, you know, when, you know, what your retirement goals are, what your family dynamics are, I can't sit here and make any general recommendations really to anybody. And if I am making a general recommendation, then I will state as such. But, you know, given the security laws in this country, I can't really go out there and say, hey, you should buy this or buy that. And when I was talking about the FANG stocks before, that's just something that's out there in the ethos and highly talked about in the news. So as far as it relates to is that, I'm just talking about the news in case any regulators are looking at this. And speaking of the news, one big piece of news that came out 2 days ago, the day before Thanksgiving, or actually, no, it'd be right after Thanksgiving. So this was Saturday. Overstock surges 23% on news it will sell retail business. So they're going to sell like the main component of their business to launch T0 crypto. And just for full disclosure, this was something where I do have a client who is in this product right now. So full disclosure on that. But what T0 is, and a lot of people in the comments, I'm very displeased to see the comments. I mean, you've got certain comments in here that I'm trying to look at this, right, scroll through quickly. But one of them was, you know, this is the onion. I mean, tell me this isn't the onion. Is it? Here it is. This must be the onion. Tell me it is the onion. Is it really the onion, right? And then other people, you know, basically saying, hey, you know, T0, great name because it's going to go to zero. But why it's called T0 is because the transaction time is zero, meaning it's instant. There's no way that Goldman Sachs or some other guys can go and, you know, let's say naked short sell you, which is basically a tool they use to drive down stock prices. And Patrick Byrne is just a true crypto OG. That's original gangster. For those of you out there wondering what OG means, but he's been in this since the beginning, was probably the first major company to start accepting cryptocurrencies. I believe it was in 2014. And the reason why Patrick Byrne was so interested in this, it had to do with the fact that Goldman Sachs has actually manipulated his stock price, Overstock.com, and being a mathematician, I think Stanford doctorate in math, this guy is a brilliant guy, and realized, hey, I know how many shares I have. I know how many shares you guys have. And, you know, there's mathematically speaking, there's no way that this amount of short selling can go on unless there's some shenanigans going on. And so he spent $34 million, $135 against Goldman Sachs. It wasn't about winning $1 million. It was about getting the discovery out and being able to prove what exactly was happening to his stock. And that's exactly what he did. And so he decided, hey, you know, through the blockchain, through this distributed ledger technology, what we can actually do is create a stock trading system where the transaction is the settlement. So it's no longer waiting 2 days, no longer waiting 3 days in order for you to get your stock. Because right now what they do is they kind of obfuscate all the trades. And let's say, you know, they, you know, you trade, you know, 10,000 other people make a trade on Apple stock and they bundle it all into one big pool or block trade. It's really hard to unwind that. And it's like a big ball of spaghetti trying to see who owns what and what was really going on. And, you know, this also allows some of the other nefarious actors out there to, you know, whether it's front running people, whether it's, you know, flash trading, all this other stuff that goes on, you know, really through the blockchain could be made much more efficiently. So he created a stock trading system where you can tokenize assets. One of those assets could be a stock. So you're trading stock of the company, but that stock is represented by a token. And eventually it could get to the point where I mean, pretending I'm not a financial advisor, could trade a stock with Joe Blow out there in the street, and then we don't even have to involve middlemen. Now, that's probably going to be quite a while before that happens, and I'm not sure if regulators will ever let that happen, but that's sort of the dream of where this could go. But, and also, they have different atomic swaps where it's like, hey, I want to take my, you know, Bitcoin and trade it for X amount of shares of Apple, and at the time, they would both be tokenized, and then you can make that swap. And that's very interesting. You know, concept that is coming down the pipeline. So a lot of people, you know, they want to poke fun at this. They want to make fun of Patrick Byrne. But, you know, I think he's really on to something big. You know, this is something where, you know, I have seen him speak a few times. My buddy Ernest Hancock, I know he's friends with him. So I've gotten, you know, privy on some conversations they've had. And it's just absolutely amazing the stuff he's working on. So I got to give him credit. And so you got to think about somebody like Patrick, who's been there at the beginning of the internet. You know, he was there, you know, for this revolution. And he thinks that this revolution in crypto is even bigger because what they were able to displace with the internet, you know, really, with, you know, you had advertising, publishing, some e-commerce, but with the cryptocurrency, it's all that and a lot more. And so it's just, you know, I think that is definitely a bullish sign where you've got a guy who sees everybody zigging and he's over here zagging and they're making fun of the zag while not fully understanding why exactly he is making the zag that he is making. Now, when it comes to other previous crypto crashes, I'm on an article called The Assassination of Bitcoin from Zero Hedge, and it shows how it went from 17 cents down to a penny. That's 94. 50 cents down to 14 cents, 72% decline. $1.10 to 56 cents, that's 49 cents, 49% decline. $8.45 to 5.58, that's 34. Now here's a big one, $32 down to $1.99, that's 94%. Went from $266 down to $63, that's 76%. And this is the one that I really remember, when it went from $11.66 down to $170, that's 85% decline. Now the reason this one stuck out for me so much is this is really the first time that we're talking about real money. We're talking about, you know, an asset that's over $1,000. At the time, it was probably right on par with gold. And all of a sudden going from, you know, $1,000 down to, what was it, 170 here. I mean, at this point, we're talking about real money. And a lot of people aren't, you know, who jumped into this last year didn't know about the volatility of Bitcoin, didn't know about, you know, all these, they only heard, you know, the rags to riches, but they didn't hear the stories of the riches to rags. Now, if you held on to your Bitcoin all along, then it would have been okay. But this is a very volatile space. And then just continuing on with it, and actually, just let me back up just a second, because this was a major catastrophic event. You had Mt. Gox, which was responsible for somewhere near around 80% of all cryptocurrency trading. And then all of a sudden, Mt. Gox went completely offline. There was you know, a few hundred million dollars at the time worth of Bitcoin that had been stolen from the platform. And today, I mean, that would be into the billions of dollars. But this was, you know, a catastrophic type event. It'd be like, you know, the New York Stock Exchange going down and saying, oh, sorry, you know, we lost, you know, X percentage of all our customers' funds. I mean, it would be a catastrophic type event, especially for what was at a time a very, very small market cap currency. I mean, it was probably into maybe the low tens of billions at the time. Not that that's, you know, nothing to sneeze at for what started off being an anarcho-capitalist, basically, you know, white paper and dream. It now had moved into, you know, the ethos of, you know, real people starting to follow this. But as we keep continuing here, we see another decline of 1326 down to 892. Now, at this point, I was, you know, you know, sitting pretty and thinking, you know, just to kind of back things up. I was on the Ernest Hancock show. I think it was like right around New Year's. It was either, you know, January 1st or January 2nd, right around that time frame. And it was a prediction show. And I had remembered how Bitcoin last time went up to 1,000, had dropped down to 100. And so I made the prediction that it would go, Bitcoin would go down to 300, thinking that, you know, there was some different, I didn't think the ETF would get approved. I saw some other bad news out there that I that I just thought would have some negative headwinds, and the ETF ended up not getting approved. There ended up being all this different, what we'd call bad news, but yet the market didn't really seem to care. But for a little while though, I was sitting pretty because the price went from 1326 down to 892. And I was thinking, okay, well, here we go down to my 300 price projection, which wasn't based off any technical analysis. I just remember it had gone down before. And so I thought that, hey, that's what would happen. And so it was, you know, a few months later, or right around that time frame, I started learning about Ethereum and what smart contracts were, and realized that, you know, this was a lot more than just like fake money being passed back and forth. And it was at that point that I flipped and decided, okay, well, I would actually start buying cryptocurrencies, because I saw what a revelation this would have, that it was not only, you know, this money being packed back and forth, that there's all these other use cases, whether it was through stock trading. You know, in the future, I think that instead of having an S&P 500 where you buy all 500 funds, what's going to happen is you're going to buy, instead of buying all 500 funds in one fund or one index, you're going to buy all 500 of those stocks. And the reason you'd want to do that is because every year, you know, let's say 10, 20, 30%, in like 2008, you know, almost 100% of those companies lost money. And in the case where, you know, you've got 10 or 20 or 30%, most people are not going to sell their index, because the index as a whole would be up. But if you're able to just siphon out the ones that lost money, what you're able to do is tax loss sell. So you're portfolio could have gone from 100,000 to 150 to 200,000, but and so you're making money, but you actually had some stocks in there that were losing money. And by isolating just the stocks that lost money, you can then maximize your tax benefits later on down the road. But right now, if you wanted to do that, even at $5 a trade, which is about the cheapest you're going to find out there. I mean, yeah, there might be a couple other slightly cheaper options. You're looking at $2,500 just to make that transaction. And that's not even counting, that's just fees, not even counting actually owning anything. So that puts that strategy out of reach for all but, you know, hedge fund managers, mutual fund managers, you know, the Warren Buffetts of the world, etc. But, you know, continuing on here, we saw another decline of 3,000 down to 1837. I remember I bought in a Bitcoin at right around the $1,800 mark when this declined, and thinking, oh man, what an idiot. Here I am, you know, buying Bitcoin at 1800 when, you know, I knew just, you know, not too long ago it was sitting over at $100, and what an idiot I feel like then. That decline did not last very long. We then went from 5,000 down to 2,900. Then we went from 7,800 down to 5,500 before we rebounded. And now we went from darn near 20,000 all the way down to wherever it's trading right now, which is currently around $3,600. So we don't know how long this is gonna last. I mean, anyone that has any predictions of, hey, I know that it's gonna be this price at this date, you know, really, I think have no idea, especially in the short run. I mean, I can confidently say that I think, you know, 10 years from now, this will be a multi-trillion-dollar market. I don't think I'm taking too far of a step. Now, I can't make any guarantees on that, but I think that what is important to keep in mind is not what the price is. It's about what you can actually do with it. And one of the things that is going to be a major headwind here is that you have, let's say, 100,000 people in the cryptocurrency space who are actively building on this right now. And what happens is every month they have bills that come due. And so now these companies raise their money primarily in Ethereum. And let's say they raised it at, and they brought in $100 million. Well, now their 100 million is only 10 million. And so what they were budgeting for, allocating based on a budget of $100 million, has now been cut down, but then they still have expenses. And so now they're needing to sell their Ether if they didn't plan accordingly. So they're having to sell their Ether in order to basically get on with their business plan. Or in some cases, some of these ICOs, initial coin offerings, were frauds all along. And they probably just took some of the Ether and said, hey, we're just cashing out. Peace out. Thanks. Thanks for trusting us, because we didn't deserve to be trusted. And there's a lot of crap that's in the market. And it's unfortunate now, because there are probably a lot of good projects out there. I mean, some of them come across my desk, and, you know, the people looking for funding and really struggling for funding. And these are companies that have, in many cases, real business plans. They have real products. They're trying to do real things. But people were so burned by this, you know, less than a year ago, that now they're thinking, you know, the last thing I want to do is jump back into this. You know, I want to wait till things get better. Well, unfortunately, you know, waiting till things get better a lot of times means, you know, you're taking on less risk, which means you're taking on less reward. And I truly do think that people who spend $10,000 on Bitcoin today are probably actually taking on a lot less risk than someone that spent $10,000 in the year 2010, because the odds of that your 10,000 going to zero in 2010 was actually probably pretty good. This is something I've heard, you know, Eric Voorhees of Shapeshift.com, I've heard him make this similar reference on the Peter Schiff show. And what I'll also try to cue up towards the end of this, I made a clip where it shows Peter Schiff basically saying, you know, see, look, Bitcoin crashed. It's down to $70. It crashed down to $100. It crashed down to $200. It crashed down to $300, $400, $500, $6,000, $10,000, $20,000. And yeah, it's crashed down to $3,600. But, you know, here he was, you know, touting how red he was, you know, back when Bitcoin was at $70. So, you know, I would, you know, be careful to put too much weight to prognosticators like him, because there are so many different use cases for this. Another interesting use case is actually when it comes to cloud storage. Right now, we basically, you know, people either trust, you know, either Microsoft, or they trust Google, or they trust Dropbox, or maybe one of these other services. Whereas what could happen in the future, and there's other cryptos doing this right now, I don't want to give out any names, but, you know, anyone can go search these up, where you have basically, let's say, hey, I've got an extra, you know, this computer I almost never use. It's a good computer, 16 gigabytes of RAM, Mac, the one that's sitting behind me. I got another one right off here that's probably not as powerful, if you guys can see. And then I'm filming on a computer as well. So, you know, I've got extra hard drive space, stuff I'm not using. And what I could do is I could use the extra hard drive space as a node where someone could put encrypted packets of information on the space that I'm not using. And then I could get paid for that. And since the information, basically bits of sand, would be on each person's computer or several different computers, it would be a method where, you know, basically, you know, the government couldn't hack into it. Only the person with the private keys could. And it's also a way for us to make money for having extra storage space that we currently aren't utilizing. So that's a pretty interesting solution to that. And then they're going to be using all this to really tie in, you know, AI, artificial intelligence capabilities into this as well. Whether it's land titling, I mean, that's, I think, like one of the, that's about the lowest hanging fruit. You know, when I recently sold my house, you know, you've got to pay this, you know, huge extortion to prove that you really owned the house and that you have the title to that land. Whereas through the blockchain, that will be made much, much easier, streamlined, and probably put all those people out of business. Now, one of the major concerns with that is just making sure that right off the get-go that we have the information right to begin with. And where this is also important is now for the first time, we will also have a true immutable, meaning can't be changed, version of history. It's well known that the victors write the history books, and that, you know, every time, you know, just imagine all the history that's actually been lost throughout the years. Just imagine what's going on with the news today. I mean, I'm one of the people to help coin the term fake news. And if you guys go to my Liberty Advisor Facebook page, it's actually at the Libertarian Advisor for the Facebook, because that's what I used to call myself. And then somebody already took the Liberty Advisor. So, anyways, it is what it is. But I had a fake news list that went viral. I believe it was either November 16th or 17th, 2016, that went viral from my page. So you don't need to tell me how fake the news is. And just imagine, you know, what was going on back then, when hardly anybody could even read or write or had access to any type of news. And so having a version of history that was, that you've got all these other people agreeing on, you could see when that history was actually changed, would be just a great, you know, feat for humanity. Now, this past weekend or during Thanksgiving, a lot of you probably realized that there was this big lettuce scare that was going on throughout the country. And what Walmart is doing is they're actually forcing all of their suppliers to go onto the blockchain. And why this is important is right now, when I believe it was romaine lettuce, you had to throw out all the different lettuce in the country, or it was a big scare. And part of the joke was, you know, now, you know, people were saying, well, hey, look, this proves, you know, marijuana is now actually safer than lettuce. Or they were saying that, you know, all the chocolate that I eat is actually safer than lettuce, or the, you know, the tacos are safer than lettuce, all different jokes. But all jokes aside, through the blockchain, what you could actually do is figure out, hey, we know that that head of lettuce came from this field, and now we can just eradicate that field as opposed to having to throw all the baby out with the bathwater. You have other companies, not companies, institutions like Yale getting in on this. You've got they threw down $400 million recently. You've got states like, I believe, Ohio just the other day actually made it legal to they actually made it legal to pay your taxes in crypto. Now, originally, I thought that first state was going to be my home state of Arizona, but I believe the governor, Ducey, ended up vetoing that. So we were almost at the lead for that, but oh well. So it just shows that there are wider use adoption cases. You have the crypto exchange Bakkt, B-A-K-K-T, where they claim that the reason that they delayed their product is because there's such high demand, and they also claim today that Starbucks was interested in actually having their customers pay for Bitcoin or pay for coffee in Bitcoin. Now, I'm not sure if that's fake news or not, and I'm also not necessarily buying the fact they need to slow things down because there's such high demand. But any event, these are all things that are coming online sooner than later. And also, I mean, the time to buy is when there's blood in the streets. The time to buy is when nobody wants in on something. The time to buy is when the fear index is at a super low level, not after things have gotten better. I remember in the traditional markets, after everything had crashed, I talked to some people and said, hey, listen, I want nothing to do with the market right now, but I, you know, maybe try me in a couple years when things get better. And to me, I'm thinking, well, what does things get better mean? So, okay, right now we're here and I'm motioning for like a low level, and then we're going to get higher. And then when once the market's higher, then you want to jump in. So essentially what you're saying is you deliberately want to miss all of this over here, all the gains. But, you know, once the gains are there, then you want to get in. So you see this fallacy of people who are always trying to get, you know, do the wrong thing at the wrong time. All along, what people should have been doing is dollar cost averaging into the market. You should start with a low dollar amount, let's say $50 a month. And again, I'm not trying to give financial advice, but people should know what they are investing in before they do it. And anyone, and I mean, everyone can afford $25 a month, $50 a month, get your feet wet, learn how cold storage works. You can take the course that we have at libertyadvisor.com. That's for free. And, you know, really, you know, don't jump full head into this and try to dump, you know, $50,000 into something that you know nothing about. I mean, there is the old saying that a fool and his money are parted soon. And I want to make sure that you guys aren't parted with your money soon. But at the same time, I also want to let you know that this is, you know, an opportunity to buy some, to, you know, catch a falling knife right now. We're not sure where it's going to go. It could go down another 80%, another 90%. And there's enough people in this ecosystem that, you know, like me, I think, okay, great, it's on sale, because I didn't have the entire infrastructure set up. When things started, when I decided to do launch the estate planning side of the company, Bitcoin was around $2,000. And I was thinking, hey, all these guys got super rich off Bitcoin, and now they're going to need some heavy duty estate planning in order to minimize their taxes. And then, so even now, Bitcoin is up 150% since then. But it's just painful knowing that it was at 20,000. But again, I didn't have my business 100% set up, because the rush happened so quickly that I couldn't really take advantage of it for myself. And I sold a lot of my assets in order to start the business, and you know, wish I held on to some of my crypto longer, but I didn't want to be exposed to that sequence of return risk. And even after the crash, I would have still been better if I would have sold out now, or if I had a, you know, a crystal ball, I would have said, well, screw saving money for the company. I'll just invest it all into Ethereum, or invest it all into one of these other coins, make a bunch of money, then sell out, and then use that money to then launch this. But, you know, no one has a crystal ball. But for me, I'm thinking, once we get this business, you know, fully up, which it is fully up and running right now, but, you know, where I envision the business going today versus where I envision it being 2 years from now is completely different, just like where I envision crypto going as well. And so I'm glad that now, you know, it gives me more time to buy in. It wasn't life-changing amount of money that I had in there, so I'm not you know, sitting in here as a crypto multimillionaire or anything. So, you know, this is an exciting time. I think that, you know, the people that had the foresight, the people that had the wherewithal, and people that had the education to make moves now will be very thankful for that in the future. But again, this is something that you should only put in money that you can afford to lose. You shouldn't gamble everything with it. And if you only have, let's say, $5,000 and you've got some other money liquid, you know, $5,000 is not, you know, you know, it probably is small enough for maybe you could do something with that money. But, you know, if you, you know, let's say if you've got 500,000 and that's all the money you have, you know, now you're talking, you know, real, real money. And that is real money that you don't want to lose. That is real money that would be very hard for somebody to make back. Now, everything is relative. So, you know, if you're a billionaire and you're throwing 500,000, no big deal. But if your entire net worth is 500,000, I wouldn't, you know, try to play, you know, a home run play to do this. And again, start small, get an education first. Don't put in more than you can invest. And then when the traditional side of things, I would take a look at the podcast I referenced earlier, Liberty Advisor Podcast, episodes 36, 37, 38, 39. I'd recommend all those. Everyone's got spare time. Everyone takes, you know, goes on car rides and plane rides and has extra time. So if you care about your money, I would definitely watch that. And please, you know, share these episodes with others. This is information that's not really that readily available to many people, especially coming from certified financial planner, especially coming from somebody that knows, you know, the ins and outs of how the Federal Reserve really works. And yeah, so I mean, it's a great way to help red pill people. And I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. This is the Crypto Wealth Advisor Podcast, episode number one. You can find it underneath the Liberty Advisor Podcast. And thanks for tuning in, and we will be back. Thank you.